Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
And we're back. We are America's 12-step radio show. My name is Mike, and this is Steppin' Out. And tonight we've been talking about young people in recovery, and we've heard three really excellent stories tonight. And we just wrapped things up with Nicoletta, and she had started talking about some of the things that you can expect when you first come into a 12-step meeting. And in her case, AA was the fellowship of your choice. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. And you guys also, I don't know if we said this on air, but offline, I think each of you also had drugs in your story.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Okay.
Definitely, I did.
Definitely for Ahmed.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure Bethany said she did too.
I did have drugs in a part of my story, and I actually, when Ahmed was speaking, he made me think of something that I realized in sobriety that, you know, alcohol, you know, and marijuana brought me to drugs. And I didn't get into drugs too much, but, you know, Ahmed got into drugs, like, later. Like, he's older than me. And that's something since I've gotten sober that really frightens me, that I know that if I didn't get sober or if I was to go back out, that I would absolutely, like, get into drugs, and that's really scary, and that's
right.
Definitely one thing that, like, keeps me sober.
Now, do you think a lot of young people can identify with that? Or do you think it's pretty much commonplace that alcohol and drugs, you know, we're in 2007 now. Do you think this day and age that alcohol and drugs pretty much go hand in hand? Because you hear a lot of the old-timers in the meetings, you know, back in Alcoholics Anonymous got started in the 30s, and you know, I don't think from my knowledge of history of the 12-step fellowships, drugs weren't they were there, but they weren't quite as prevalent.
Right.
And it seems like they almost go hand in hand. You talk to an old timer, and you know, someone with like 20, 30, 40 years, and they're like, "This is AA. We
right.
don't talk about drugs here." I mean, it's how different is it for young people in recovery? Is that something you guys need to kick around?
Well, I can speak for I remember when I first came into the rooms, it was a toss up between whether I wanted to go to, you know, Narcotics Anonymous or AA, even, you know, cocaine at that time. I'd been pretty much using regularly. And then, you know, my philosophy was, you know, addiction is addiction.
Okay.
But and I didn't think that there was anyone who, you know, in their 20s and 30s in this day and age didn't drink and drug together.
Right.
But I have met a few people in recovery that basically never did drugs.
And we've had them on the show too, you know, just the pure alcoholics.
Right. And I think you know, I do think as I've been in the program a little more, that's made me aware that then, you know, that maybe, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, if the primary purpose is to take the message to another alcoholic, you can have other addictions, I believe, you know, but alcohol has to be one of them. You know, I think you have to have had a problem with alcohol to identify with the alcoholic story. You know.
Well, it makes sense because the name of the fellowship is Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about what it was like when you first came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We left off with Nicoletta. Tell us a little bit more with someone that really has no experience, and maybe someone struggling with this disease of alcoholism and is kind of like on the teeter-totter, kind of on the edge. Well, I think I want to check out the meetings, but I'm really not sure. What can they expect? I mean, is it really a room full of Bowery bums and like, you know, army fatigues and trench coats?
It's really not. And that's, I don't know if I was expecting something like that or if I was expecting born-again Christians.
Okay.
You know, I really thought it would be one or the other, even though I had a couple of friends who were in the rooms, so I should have known not to expect that. But, I really wasn't sure how it was going to be, and I went into a room that was full of so many young people and so many good-looking people, too. I'm not going to lie.
Alcoholics do clean up.
Yes, we do.
I felt really, really lucky that I had a friend with me, though, because, I mean, it took me probably about a week or a week and a half after I decided to get sober to actually make it to a meeting, because I really wanted to make sure that our schedules would coordinate so I could go with my friend, you know?
So that was real important for you to have that support.
Yeah. It was pretty important to me. But then after that, you know, a couple of days later, I went to a meeting on my own.
Right.
And it was totally fine.
Do you think you could have got to that meeting without the support of your friend?
I probably could have. Okay. I just needed somebody to kick my ass and get me there. You know what I mean?
That little jump start.
Yeah. But then the second meeting I went to alone, and I was just so surprised that people wanted to talk to me afterwards. You know, I didn't say anything during the meeting. I didn't share. All I did was, you know, raise my hand and say I had such and such number of days, you know. And then I was flooded by people afterwards coming up to me and, like, giving me their numbers. I was like, why is everyone so nice? But it was really, it was wonderful.
And why were they giving you their numbers?
Oh, that's right.
I mean, I know why, but
I forgot.
We want to make sure it wasn't like, you know,
people
predatory
weren't hitting on
anything.
Me. People were not predatory, but you do hear about that happening, and you have to be careful. But no, I mean, everyone is just really open and wanting to help. I mean, it's part of wanting to do service and help people with less time than you.
How about you, Ahmed?
You know, it's funny. I didn't have any, you know, my conception of AAA at the time I came in had been pretty positive. It'd been on, like, The Sopranos, it'd been on television. It really, you know, I'd watch all these different movies.
Wait a minute. You call Chris from The Sopranos a positive experience?
Well, you know, the idea that, like, it got him, you know, it wasn't ever portrayed as, I didn't really see it as, but what I was afraid of was, like, rehab, because I'd watched Intervention, and I was like, man, you got to go to rehab. That's like, you know, be away from, because I couldn't imagine suspending my life for 30, 60, 90 days that some of these people had. So, so when coming to AA was, I didn't have any, and I actually, my first meeting was about four or five people. One guy was from jail. Another guy was about 70 years old. Another guy was, and so it was that typical, but they really did reach out, and that was fine. I mean, AA is a cross segment of the population. It's the people you would have been drinking with at the bar. I mean, it's those friends that we once considered so hip and cool that actually that found their way into the rooms as well. And as with everything, it's been, Nicoletta touched on it, tons of great looking people and meetings have been the network. You know, I've been sober camping. When I came into the rooms, I definitely got my hand up. You know, I developed a sober network of men.
Talk about that a little bit. Men, you know, yes. We hear so often men with the men, women with the women.
Absolutely. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't planning on listening to any of those suggestions. You know, I was like, I'll do the 90 days, as I mentioned in my story, when they said that, no, it's about not drinking a day at a time. You know, the response that I got when I told them those things, like, well, what about when I get married? What about when I make my, you know, when I'm famous or I get successful? They said, right now, you just told us that you got kicked out of your girlfriend's place, that you were almost arrested. Why don't you just talk? They said, can you not just drink tonight and get to a meeting tomorrow? And I said, yeah, of course. And that's what it was really about. The response to it was to focus on today. And this stick with the men. I a lot of guys introduced me. I got involved with, I met one guy and he took me for coffee and kind of explained the program to me, and like a guy that I thought I could relate to. And I went to more meetings with him. a couple more meetings with him, and you know, just guys would reach out to me, and mm-hmm. I was receptive at that point. You know, I got involved with service after I had 90 days, and got in touch with some old timers and hear their stories. You know, I love the history and the war stories, so you know, I got up with a couple of old timers that, you know, gave me all these fascinating stories about New York sobriety and New York rooms, and that helped. You know, staying up till 5 o'clock. You know, with these guys talking, staying up with other newcomers. I mean, you know, I got involved. I had a network with other people that had about the same amount of time, and we would all stay up together and go to sober events together. And I just couldn't believe I started having fun miraculously. I mean, you know, dancing sober was very difficult at first, but, you know, I never thought I'd dance again. I never thought I'd date again. I never thought I would enjoy anything, because alcohol had been so interwoven into everything I did. I just couldn't contemplate it. And
so,
and
there is life after you put the drink down.
And it's, and like some moments, I'll let others speak. Actually, why don't you guys tell me?
I just want to say, when you put the drink down, that's when life starts.
Yeah.
Say that again, Bethany. Would you? Please?
I said, for me, it was, my life didn't start until I put the drink down.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, my world had become so small when I was drinking.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, a big fear when I was getting sober was, what do people do? What do you do if you don't drink? Oh, my God.
Because you have all this free time now, right?
Yeah, but, you know, now looking back, I'm like, wow, my life was really sad. Yeah. I didn't do anything when I was drinking. Like, if I was able to get out of bed and go to work, I did that. And, like, you know, by the end of my shift, I started shaking because I needed a drink. So as soon as I got out of work, I drove my car right up the street to go sit in someone's basement and drink the night away. Mm. Just drank all night long. Yeah.
Bethany, yeah. Tell us a little bit about sponsorship and what sponsorship is and how important it is to have a sponsor once you come into a 12-step fellowship. Nicoletta, I'm sorry, Nicoletta.
Oh, okay.
We'll get to you again, Bethany.
Okay.
Well, I got a sponsor when I had 20-something days, I think. And it's basically, it's a person who can help you through the big book and help you through the 12 steps. So, I mean, people pick sponsors for different reasons. I've heard people saying that they chose their sponsor because, you know, she was pretty or whatever. You know, she had a lot of time. You know, I mean, basically the guideline is that you're supposed to choose somebody who has more time than you and who has at least a year. So usually
kind of like a guide or a mentor, so to speak.
Exactly.
And another thing, too, I think, is that they should have what you want.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing you hear a lot.
What is it that you want?
You know, I think that's the tricky part when you're first coming into the room.
Yeah.
The tricky part is like when you're still kind of detoxing and I'd see a guy with the BMW. I'm like, oh, okay, well, then, you know, I like it. You know, he must be doing well. And but the process is such that, you know, sooner or later, you know, to find someone who's, you know, has the kind of life and sobriety that you think you will want, and that might change.
Someone you can look up to almost as like a role
model.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I chose my sponsor actually because she shared in a meeting and it was something that I totally related to.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't necessarily that she has something that I want, but it was that she has been through some of the same things that I have, and she's sitting here in this meeting right now and seems totally at peace about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, are there any strings attached to sponsorship?
Well, technically, you're supposed to call them every day.
No, but I mean, like, you know, for someone out there that doesn't know, you know, do you have to pay them a salary or anything like that? You know,
all about doing service.
Okay.
And you know, you can fire your sponsor if you decide that it's not going to work, or you can say in the beginning, you know, you can say, will you be my interim sponsor? So, you know, until I find someone else for
okay.
permanent basis, you know, will you help me okay. for now get started, get going?
Have any of you guys had to change sponsors and move on?
I have, actually.
Bethany?
You know, I was thinking about this earlier. I've heard you know, I've heard people that have had the same sponsor for 20 years and other people who have had 10 sponsors in the first year. And, I mean, that's not something I would recommend to anybody. But I have had a few sponsors now. And yeah, I've had to get, I've had to change sponsors for, you know, various reasons. And luckily, though, all the sponsors I've had have not gone back out. I've heard of that happening to people. And you know, that's like where the whole one day at a time thing comes in. It's like we're still alcoholics, even though we're sober for however much time and we're still fallible. But anyways, usually with me, it's, you know, my sponsors that I've had to change have just gotten really busy. And the sponsor I have now, actually, you know, she's retired, so she has all this time and I can call her and usually get in touch with her. But, you know, my sponsor before that had a family and she was getting her master's and she worked and she just had a lot going on. But, you know, back to she, and, you know, she had something that I wanted, you know. She had healthy relationships and a healthy marriage.
Imagine that in an alcoholic's life. A healthy marriage and healthy relationships.
Yeah,
amazing.
I still got a ways to go with that, but but yeah, and you know, she was, and here's someone who dropped out of high school, had three kids by the time she was like 21 or something like that, on welfare, all this crazy stuff, and now she's a teacher, and she has her master's degree, and you know, it's amazing the way we can, the way our lives turn around when we stop drinking.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. How soon did you guys get into the steps? We hear about the 12 steps. First of all, Ahmed, tell us a little bit about what the steps are.
Sure. You know, the steps are basically the process of recovery. It's what will allow you to, I believe, you know, recover from a hopeless state of mind. You know, from the idea, from some of the self-loathing, from some of the negative thinking, from some of the provides a, you know, a bridge back to living. I mean, a bridge, you know, a design for living.
Okay.
And for me, I was eager to do the steps because I just, you know, I figured, why not? I mean, let's just get this party on the road.
You wanted to get better.
Yeah, I wanted to get better, and I don't know if I had a lot of faith, but I was very curious. Like, how does these, you know, these things are culled from all these different religions. You know, I wanted to intellectualize them, mm-hmm. and then say, you know, they don't even, you know. But what they really do in the beginning is give you a sense of humility. You know, alcoholics addicts tend to be, at least for my case, I can't speak for everybody, very self-centered, very self-absorbed. Cannot see their part in the wreckage or destruction they've done to themselves or others,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of there might be a lot of guilt. They may be carrying a lot of shame or anger or things that they don't know is, you know, contributing to this process of destruction that they're on. So for me, my sponsor, you know, we did the first three steps. And during my first 90 days, and he just kind of kept me there. And, you know, and everyone does the steps very differently. It is outlined in the book. And, you know, but they're, you know, they've
Which
been,
book is that?
For the Alcoholics Anonymous, we call it the Big Book.
Okay.
It's a, you know, and it was written by our founder, you know, by our founder, and it has stories in there of you know, it has stories, and it outlines the steps that worked for those very early, cases of recovery.
Okay, so there's stories in the AA Big Book to help you identify with
yes.
other alcoholics.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool.
And you know, that becomes that book, you know, you read several times, and more is always revealed as you work through the steps. Your sponsor will take you through the book, and kind of draw your experience to the experience being or to the step or discussion being discussed in the book, And that becomes clear because I read the book over a weekend, like when I had a couple of weeks of sobriety, and I thought, oh, that was nice and quaint, and I put it to the side. But as you work the steps, you go through it more and more.
Right.
So the first three about that, after I made 90 days, I started my fourth step, which is to make a fearless and searchful moral inventory. And that step was where, you know, I started feeling like I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, just so much was just on paper. Just you see yourself. You see all the things that you thought, you know, that have made you upset, that have caused you, you know, resentments, and part of that stuff is seeing also what the part you played into that. And so since then, since that fourth step, I'm on my ninth step.
And what's the ninth step?
The ninth step is to make direct amends to those that I have harmed.
Okay. So you can kind of go out and clean up the past of all the wreckage you did out there and your drinking?
And for someone that hasn't been into the program, you know, that part sounds, I mean, it sounded so intimidating and frightening to me. I said, I can get a sponsor. I can go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I can do all of these things that are suggested. But there's no way I'm going to make direct amends mm-hmm. to people. And what the the steps before that do for you, they really help give you self-esteem. Mm. They really replace that fear of people with the idea of, like, I am no longer that person that I've seen in my step four, step five.
You mean you get from the steps the same thing you were looking for in the bottle?
In the bottle, mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when I came into the program, I was like, of course I couldn't make direct amends because I couldn't even look someone in the eye.
Right.
You know, but over the course of working through the steps, you know, I can really look someone in the eye and say, you know, I'm not that person anymore. And you know what? I played a part in whatever happened between us. And that is the recovery that happens. You know, it's coming from, you know, this hopeless state of mind to a place where you have self-esteem and self-love and self-worth.
Right.
And, you know, and it's different for everybody. You know, I would never say that, you know, the reason I'm not, you know, but I think that the goal of, you know, however you get there, the goal of the steps is to make you feel good about yourself, you know, at the end. You know, the end about it is not to, you know, it's to give you an experience where you awaken to life, I think.
And we got about 5 minutes left, so I think let's talk a little bit about, because I'm really interested in what we kind of touched on about how once you get sober, life doesn't actually end. It actually just begins. I think that's a real awesome point that Bethany made.
Yeah.
Nicoletta, talk a little bit about fun in recovery. Like, what do you guys do? I mean, what's going on?
Oh, my God. I don't want to sound like, oh, kumbaya. We all, like, you know, sit in circles and join hands and have sober fun together. But
there's those bonfires in the woods.
Exactly, the bonfires in the woods again. But I have never laughed so much in my life, you know, and I was surprised at how much of that actually happened, like, during a meeting, you know, because you listen to what someone's saying and you so relate to it, and it's hilarious. Alcoholics are funny people.
It's not all gloom and doom when you go into a meeting.
It is so not. And then after that, you know, like, you just get together. Dude. Food, fun, and fellowship, as my friend says. I mean, I know it sounds cheesy, but honestly, I've never had so much fun. Yeah. I didn't have this much fun when I was drinking. Yeah. I haven't quite gotten to the being able to dance sober that Ahmed was talking about. I'm not quite there yet. I'm still kind of inhibited where that comes in. But I'm really excited to do sober karaoke.
Yeah. Oh, guess what? Yes. I never did karaoke drunk, but I did it sober. And I love it.
Yeah. I was the master at drunk karaoke, but, you know, I'm really excited to try that sober. It's a lot of fun because, you know, you find a group of people that you can actually beat yourself with without having to drink.
Right, right.
You know?
And you don't feel like you have anything to prove or you know, one thing I found interesting, and it seemed like about all your stories, is that you're always trying to be the person that you didn't feel like you were. You're always trying to be somebody other than who and what you were. And now in recovery, it just seems like everyone's doing the same thing. The goal is common, and you could just be yourself. You know, finally, you're starting to discover who and what yourself is, and you're able to do that now.
And I can't speak for everybody, but, like, there's just no judgment in alcoholics. So when you get to that point where you can laugh freely and you can share openly, I mean, you'll find out that there's nothing new that you can share to shock anyone.
Yeah, right.
And when that occurs at the fellowship. I mean, you know, some of the things that I've said that I've carried around for years that I just thought made me such an awful person, you know, my sponsors yawned at, or people have laughed at me and said they did. I mean, you know, it's, and that really just helps break that shell that we're in. And then once you find out that, like, oh, this is, I'm not unique, I'm not a bad person, you know, the person you want to be come, you know, blossoms. Mm-hmm. Blossoms, yeah.
How about you, Bethany?
That has been my experience as well. And I still use kid gloves when I'm talking to non-recovery people because I can still blow them out of the water. But as for people in the rooms, I can tell them anything. And you know what? I have no more secrets. I really don't.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just stuff that I kept inside for so, so long. Like Ahmed was saying, these people don't even blink an eye at it because they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Totally.
And, you know, just to let you know, some of the things, I feel like I didn't really get to talk too much about my life and recovery, but, and you know.
Can you get it all in 10 seconds?
I can, yeah. Well, that's okay. I can turn it back over. But I've done a lot of amazing things. And like Nicoletta said, I've never laughed so hard. And I never had this much fun when I was drinking.
That's very cool. Yeah. Guys, we could probably do another 2 hours on this. So I just want to thank all three of you so much for being with us tonight.
And, thank you.
Thank
we
you.
We definitely do appreciate it. And we hope you can come back on the show real soon again.
Sure.